This is a Doxcast, not an Argon Soxcast, or a Bendis and Loxcast. Now I'm hungry. This is a Doxcast. It's a nerdy Toxcast. Discuss a Moxcast with Rich Early and friends.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another experimental episode of the Doxcast. I am your co-host and only host for the day, Josh Trumbo. I am here at Paradox, and I am coming at you live, streaming, or if you're listening later, then I'm not live. That's a good start there. Mr. Richard Early is on his way back from vacation, and so I am at the store. I needed to be here, and I figured, well, why don't I stop in to the streaming room and try to fill some time with the Doxcast, because we need one for this week. So I've just opened up the floodgates. Let's chat. Find the chat where you're at, whether you're on Twitch or on Facebook, and talk to me. What have you got? So far, we have JD Daring says hello. Hello, JD. Thank you for stopping in. If there's anything on your mind, please feel free to throw it in the chat there. I already have one topic. Mr. Matt Jensen has brought forth the topic of Marvel United, and that's actually something interesting. So it's Marvel United is a board game that was, I believe, designed by Eric Lang. It's being released by Cool Mini or Not, C-M-O-N or Come On, however you prefer to say their name. And it's, of course, in true Come On fashion, has miniatures in the box. So far, it looks like it's a fairly simple game, from what I've read about it, because I have looked into it. There is a retailer pledge level. We may pledge on that one, on that Kickstarter, because it's getting some good traction. And it seems like it may have a very wide appeal. And part of that, as Matt brought up, was the idea, the notion that it has very simplistic gameplay. And it does have kind of, I don't necessarily want to say cutesy, but the artwork and the design is kind of cutesy. It's a little chibi-ish, almost. And so I think that they're going for a younger audience with that one. I could be wrong. I could be way off topic. But it seems like that's the idea, that it's not going to be the next Blood Rage, pick another very intricate, miniature heavy game that Come On has released recently. And I think if that's the case, I think that's maybe a good idea, because it's good to have a variety of games, for a certain publisher. Now, other publishers, or any publishers, can probably get away with having a specific type of game that they release, and that's more than fine. But having a diverse portfolio, I guess, is probably good, so that, you don't always have to release something as big and weighty as Blood Rage. That's kind of the go-to here. So that's kind of my thought on it. I haven't really looked too much into the gameplay. Kind of the surface of it, just to see what it's about and see if that's something that we want to pursue as a store. So that can be kind of disappointing, I get, especially if you follow a particular designer. So if you're a fan of Eric Lang, and you're expecting, oh, he's coming up with a new design, and it's based on Marvel property, and then this comes out, and it's like, oh, it's really simple cooperative play. And to be fair, again, I don't know exactly how simple it is, because I haven't really looked that far into it. I've heard that from other people as well, and reading some of the comments and things. So it may not be a game that's for everybody. Very few games are. It's kind of a dumb thing to say, but I mean, clearly, not everything is for everybody. But that brings up kind of an interesting concept, you know, because there are certain game designers that I like, but and I do get excited when I hear that they're creating a new game, but then if it's not something that's in my wheelhouse or something I have any particular interest in, that's disappointing. Because, of course, a lot of games take years to develop, do play testing and things like that. So, you know, if one of your favorite designers is coming out with a new game and it sounds like something you're interested in, you like the property, the genre, and all the theme and all that kind of stuff, but then find out that it's maybe not something that you're going to want to play, that can be very disappointing. It'd be like, you know, name your favorite band, and let's just say, for example, you have a band that you enjoy listening to, and they play hard rock. We'll just go with that. And then they're releasing their first album in 3 years, and you're very excited about it, and you find out that it's country western music. It can be very disappointing then, because that's not necessarily what you're interested in.
Hello.
Hey, Brandon, come on in.
Sorry to interrupt.
No, that's all right. I didn't know if you would have the time. Go ahead and have a seat. So I've got a co-host now.
Yeah, I'm pulling double duty once again. I do this on Tuesday nights.
So you're an old hat at that. That's excellent.
Running a magic tournament and then also talking about
whatever comes up.
Various things.
Yeah. So welcome, Brandon Ross from the
Hello,
Paradox Comic Show fame. I was just pontificating a little bit about some board games and things based on a question we had, but I was coming down to the end of that particular thread.
Yeah, board games are not my specialty.
Yeah.
I kind of, sometimes when the rules being explained, you know, when I'm new to a board game, my eyes just gloss over, and I'm just like, I just want to play with the little figurines.
Yeah. Well, maybe then that Marvel United game would be one you'd enjoy.
Because
supposedly the gameplay on it is a little bit simpler than people were expecting from the designer. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I was kind of going on about there. But JD in the chat suggested we talk about Magic the Gathering, and I'm sure that's something that you can talk about.
Yeah, right now I'm running the World's Watch Party, so it's cool we have the stream of Worlds, the World Championships. We just call it Worlds in Magic. We've called it Worlds in shorthand for like the past 26 years or so, or however long it's been going on. So it's really cool to see, you know, the best top-end Magic being played, and mm-hmm. also seeing that top-end Magic being played on the stream. I don't know. I think we got really good competition here in Fargo. Not to like discourage anybody from coming, but like that's how you get that's how you get good at it. Like I remember we had Brad Nelson. Mm-hmm. He was just getting onto the Pro Tour when I first started playing Magic here at Paradox about over 10 years ago now.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, being able to say, oh, a pro player is playing at the same table as me, like, that's a huge motivation to, like, you know, mm-hmm. just learn more about the ins and outs of the game.
Well, and that is a good way to get better, because, you know, if you just play against me, who's someone who hasn't actually played Magic in years, like I started when Revised was out,
Ooh.
Right? Like, I played, it was about Ice Age, I think, is when I tapped out. So you're not going to get better if you play against me. You might get some easy matches, but if you play against somebody who is, a top competitor, then you'll learn some new strategies and things, hopefully.
And that's one thing that's so cool with, you know, internet media these days is, mm-hmm. especially with streaming and, you know, posting, like, videos where they go 5-0 with deck or something like that. Mm-hmm. And that brings up Corey Baumeister. He does his dropping bombs videos on Star City Games, and it's really cool to see, because I've talked with him a lot about, you know, Magic, and I've played against him. I've, you know, seen him talk after games about what he could have done differently. But to see somebody in the moment while they're mm-hmm. you know, playing the game, because he's doing it on Arena or Magic Online,
right?
To talk through the thought process, and I'm like, I'm gonna do this to activate mm-hmm. this, and you know, if they have that in hand, you know, this and this,
right?
So that just helps you conceptualize what how to play that deck so much better, and that's really cool
and that's something that I've always found interesting too, watching pretty much anything being streamed, whether it's a video game or something like Magic or something like that, for those top players, when they are describing their thought processes, here's why I'm doing this, here's what I'm looking for here, I just noticed that, so I'm going to do this. It really opens you up to those, you know, all those strategies and things that you might not consider. It's like, oh, well, I've got my deck, I know I want to get these cards and I want to play them. It's like, well, it's more than that. Mm-hmm. You have to be thinking, okay, I want to play this, but if he's got this or this or this, because that's the type of deck they're playing, I need to be able to answer that, and, you know.
Yep.
So, yeah, I think that stuff is all very, very interesting to hear top-level people share that.
And there is the trap. So I've been playing quite a bit of Arena. I think I've played more Arena than actual physical paper Magic for the past year or so. I've just been running tournaments. So I haven't been really playing so much. But I am playing Arena, and I definitely catch myself in the trap of, you know, since it's not really... You know, I'm just playing it by myself. I do like to, you know, reflect on, you know, what I could have done better in a match or something like that. But since I'm not talking about it or going through my plays afterwards with a friend or, you know, another competitor, I definitely feel like I'm missing some key elements.
Yeah.
So if I was just to, you know, sit down and play my Arena deck here, I would probably not do so good, even though I do pretty okay online. You know, I don't like challenge myself too hard. I just like to get, you know, the flows going. You know,
you just like to find some newbies and crush them.
Yeah,
right?
It's like that. Oh, that's what pre-releases.
This is my third game of Magic.
Oh. That's why I always felt so bad at pre-releases, especially the midnight ones, because everybody else would be tired, and I typically run on an overnight schedule. So that was my prime time. Mm-hmm. And I always felt like, you know, it'd always be new people, and I'd feel kind of bad just crushing them on pre-release, but that was the only time I'd go for
it. How else are they going to learn?
Yeah, you know, yeah, that is true. That's one thing that's tough, you know, when you're learning Magic, though, is you're going to lose a lot.
Oh, absolutely. And I remember when I started playing Magic back in the day, I was that guy that built like a 90 card deck because I just couldn't cut anything.
Yep.
It's like, oh, I've got to have some walls in here because those are important. And it's like, and I'd play and I would just get absolutely crushed. But that was how I learned. I had to learn those lessons where it's like,
the concentration.
You need to have this many lands in there if you have this many cards, and you shouldn't have this many cards. You should have this many because you're not going to get the ones you need, and so forth.
You want to play at the deck minimum, which for constructed is 60, for limited is 40, just because you put your best cards in there, and the land breakdowns have been kind of settled on, you know, for the past 10 years or so.
Yeah.
How many lands you're on, so. Well, and Magic right now with Throne of Eldraine, or not Throne of Eldraine, Theros Beyond Death. We're returning to, beloved by some, the Theros set, the Theros plane. Elspeth, one of the planeswalkers that's been, you know, killed off for the longest time.
Sure.
She's returning from the River of Styx, or, you know, from the underworld, and that kind of
like you do.
Plays into the theming of it. Personally, for like the Magic story, I don't care about anything they write that's not on the Magic card.
You don't read all the novels and the...
Right, yeah, I don't. I've tried it, and it doesn't feel the same as when I'm just looking at the card art, the card name, and the flavor text, or what the card even does. I love it when there's no flavor text, and the art is just something random, but what the card does explains to me part of the story.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I always liked the flavor text on a lot of the Goblin cards, because it's usually just a quote about something blowing up.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, we got a couple more comments here. Yeah. Since we have one, JD's got another one that kind of plays into what we were just talking about there, because we mentioned limited and constructed. He asked if you prefer limited or constructed.
I would prefer limited right now, just because I feel like standard, it's in such a state of flux. Like, I don't want to discourage anybody from building a deck or anything like that for standard, but for me personally, I always want to just have the one deck that I feels solid enough that will take me through maybe another set release or two. For limited, though, It can be, you know, like cramming for a test. Like you're absorbing every single card in the set, and then you're opening the pack, and you're like, okay, I know this one. Yep, something I could start my draft off with. Sealed deck, you get a little bit of a roll of the dice with that compared to draft. I really think drafting is probably the most skill-intensive way to play Magic.
Yeah.
And it can be pretty daunting for a new player. Yeah. But typically, you can just stick with two colors. Mm-hmm. Pick the best cards in those two colors, and everybody else will also be in some kind of two color deck at the table. Right. So,
yeah. No, that's one thing that I've always enjoyed, and if I, you know, I've played a little bit here and there over the past few years, nothing, you know, I usually don't come down to docks and play in a tournament or something like that, but I do like the idea of the sealed or the draft just because, you know, it evens the playing field just a bit.
Yeah.
Like you said, there's still a lot of skill involved with knowing what to put in and what, especially with draft, what to take. It's like, okay, this is a great card, but, being
so... So, speaking of Magic, I gotta kick off the next round here, so...
All right, so you go do that, and I'll keep talking about stuff. Yeah. Thanks for dropping in. Just use a little time there. But yeah, like I was saying, for me, I do enjoy that because I don't have the time or money to put into Magic and be any good at it. But I do enjoy the game. And so if I play something like a draft or a sealed or something like that, then it's like, okay, I've got these cards, you've got those cards, that's it. You don't have years worth of cards or sets worth of cards. You have these. And you just have to make the best of it. And then it's a lot more, playing it than buying it. But yeah, so now that Brandon's gone, we have less Magic authority in the room here. So I'm going to go over John Layton and mentioned the Alien RPG in the chat. That's something we were just recently talking about. And it sounds fascinating. I certainly would like to play it. I hope we get a chance to sometime. John is one of the players who plays on stream. We do our Thursday night board game tabletop stream. And that's something I think it just recently came out. I'm assuming it did because I haven't heard about it until John brought it up last Thursday or slightly before then. But Alien. That seems like it'd be a fun universe to play in because there's a lot of stuff. So the Alien films, right? Let's talk about the Alien films a little bit here. If you guys haven't seen the Alien films, watch the first two. And then if you want, there's other ones. But really, the first two in my book are fantastic because Alien is a horror movie in space. It's a haunted house movie. It's a bunch of people trapped in a spaceship with this unkillable monster lurking in the shadows, and who's going to be the next one to get picked off? Fantastic movie. Really well done. And then Aliens came out. So Ridley Scott did Alien. John Cameron then did the movie Aliens, which is the sequel, and it's just a full-out war movie. It's people just going, there's aliens everywhere, they're blasting them with machine guns and sentry guns, and it's also fantastic. Great movie. So good. And so there's a lot of things you could do with that RPG and have it still fit in, because the Alien franchise has gone through a number of different permutations. Like everyone who takes on the movies puts a different spin on it. And so it feels like, obviously you could do it with any tabletop RPG, you could do it with any property or whatever, but it's still, you have some kind of groundwork laid out to build off of whatever kind of campaign you want to play. So that seems like an interesting one. Hopefully we'll get it to stream sometime soon. The system on it, if you're interested in that, play tabletop RPGs like Dungeons and Dragons, things like that, it plays off the same system as Tales from the Loop, which is another interesting role-playing game that we did play on stream once. And Tales from the Loop is kind of, it's very much like Stranger Things, but slightly different bent to it. It takes place in an alternate history, 1980s, where there is a lot of, you know, technology and stuff that we didn't have in the 80s. So, you know, imagine, like, I'm trying to think of what all there is exactly, but, you know, it, use your imagination. There's lots of great sci-fi technology, ways you can go with that, space travel and things if you want to. And but yeah, so it's a great system. It uses just six-sided dice, using, like, I think sixes are your successes, so it's a very rules-light system that, you know, I found more appreciation for over the years. So in terms of role-playing games, I personally have played a number of them. There are a lot, but I've played Dungeons & Dragons, fantastically fun, 3rd edition, 3.5, 4th edition, a little bit of 5th edition, which is really good. 5th edition is great. But I just, it came out more recently when I don't have time to play. So, but if you look at the progression, even within Dungeons & Dragons, it's like, there's like numbers, a lot of numbers heavy stuff, and then it went to like 4th edition, where there was a lot of like tactical miniature type combat, and then 5th edition, now it's pulling away from that, or it's pulled away a bit from that, where there's still plenty of rules, but everything is streamlined and laid out in such a way that numbers are important, but they aren't the biggest thing, right? Like, it's easy to get more even numbers across a group. Because I used to play with players that there were some that loved the metagame. They would get into it, they would find all the exact feats and tweak their stats and the magic items and stuff to make them the biggest number crunchers in the game. And they loved playing it that way. And then we had players who only really cared about the role-playing aspect. They just wanted to create a character, and they didn't care if this particular weapon, and it's like, oh, I'm not proficient in it, but it would be really cool if my character, I see them having it. So they'd want to play that way. And it's hard to balance that group out sometimes. Like, there's a lot of compromise that have to happen. But 5th edition seems to do a pretty good job of making that more. It's like, okay, well, yes, you get this bonus, but it's a more static bonus. It's easier for you to get that and someone else to get something similar. So, yes, maybe you're adding 8 to your roll, but they're still adding 6, you know. I'm oversimplifying things and going off on tangents here, but that's what we're doing today. So, yeah, the Alien RPG, like I said, goes off of those 6-sided dice and, you know, not a whole lot. At least from the Tales from the Loop, in terms of all the things you have to consider. Like, there are some skills you get and some abilities and things like that, but it's meant to be a very quick, make your character, get playing, and have fun. So, and certainly with something like an Alien RPG where you very well may be dying quickly, because, I mean, come on, they're aliens. And you may have to make a new character. I don't know how that works, John, if you're still happen to be in the chat, if you have any insight on how many characters, like, if it's supposed to be you try to survive, or it's like, okay, well, this person dies, then maybe someone else on the ship speaks up, and then you can play someone else or something. But it seems like it'd be very easy to get into and do all that. So that's pretty fun. There is a copy of the core rule book here at Paradox, so if you're interested in it, you can certainly stop by and check out that book and then possibly purchase it even and give it a try. And if you do, I'd love to hear what your experience is with it. So there you go. That went on a nice long tangent. What other properties would be good to have as a role-playing game? Because there's a lot of them, right? Like, you have ones where it's like, it's Dungeons & Dragons. It's its own thing. But you have, there's like Firefly and Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Star Wars, of course. There's several different Star Wars systems. But I wonder if there's any properties that haven't been made into role-playing games, tabletop role-playing games, that you guys would be interested in seeing and playing. So I don't know if there's anybody still hanging out in the chat there. If you have any thoughts on that, go ahead and sound off. Because I'm trying to think, because, you know, we've got, there's a Marvel game, at least one. There's probably a couple at this point, but there's like this old Marvel role-playing system that I played with friends a while back. And that was a really fun system, too. We would always randomly generate our heroes. So you'd end up with just the oddest assortment of powers and then try to figure out the way that they all work together. And so that was really fun. I really enjoyed that system. And that was all based on percentile dice. So you'd have your stat, and the number of your stat, basically there was a range, so you'd have like feeble, poor, up to astounding, and you know, incredible, and whatever. And then you, so that would determine where your successes would lie and what you would need to get on a 1 to 100 roll to be successful there. And I just remember we just had a lot of fun with that. Like Dungeons and Dragons was our we still had fun with it, but it was our more deep, more serious game. You know, there was a big ongoing story and all that kind of stuff. Whereas our Marvel game was a lot more episodic. It was fun to just sit down and play, and goofy stuff happened, and you know. So yeah, there's a lot of those systems that are out there, and on based on various intellectual properties. I wonder, is there a Magic the Gathering one? And if not, why not? Because there's enough stuff with Planeswalkers and the lore of that that I can't imagine that wouldn't be successful. Although, I don't know what the crossover is between Magic players and role players. You know, because there isn't necessarily a correlation there. Yes, we all play at Paradox, and right now, if you were to walk outside there, you see people playing Magic and people playing, I can't remember if they're Pathfinder today or Starfinder, maybe. But I wonder how well that would do. And if it exists, why have I not heard about it? Because it might be interesting to try and craft a system around that, right? Like you're a burgeoning planeswalker, or maybe you're trying to aspire to be one. I don't know where you'd have to start off with it. Then going off of the various colors and the abilities that you get, or that they have within Magic, you know. Well, they've had D&D Magic settings. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I was just thinking about it and wondering, you know, it just seems ripe for the plucking there, you know. So that's good that somebody else has thought of that. But I'd be curious to see, like, an entire system based around it, you know. But yeah, I'm just trying to think if there are any other good intellectual properties that I haven't seen. You know, I mean, we have a lot of great TV shows and stuff now that are, obviously, you know, you have like Game of Thrones. I'm pretty sure there's got to be a Game of Thrones one out there. But you got to think of stuff like, what is it? Like Netflix has Altered Carbon. That might be an interesting setting. And those things, maybe it's a setting that fits within an existing system. I don't know. There's a lot of good stuff out there. And honestly, there's too much out there for anyone to play all of it, so maybe we don't need more, but just kind of spitball in there. So yeah, anything else on anybody's mind? We're just chatting today, just enjoying this while the Magic World Championship viewing party is going on outside there, which is a really interesting thing. It's a premium event, so being a premium store, having premium status here, can't say premium anymore. Paradox is able to put on this event, and there's a really cool foil alternate artwork Crucible of Worlds card that go to the top 16 players in a tournament that they play while they're watching the top players play in the World Championship. Kind of an interesting event. But yeah, we were talking about it a little bit earlier in that card. So it only, there's they only made them for the premium stores that are so that can put on these events. And so there'd be 16 of them, and I think there's about 80 stores, so that's like less than 2,000 of these cards that would be printed, unless they did more for other events and things that we don't know about, but I think it's supposed to be exclusive to this. So that's kind of, it's kind of neat. Probably be worth the price of admission. It'll be worth something at some point, being that rare of a card. But yeah, so that's going on out here in the store today. That's pretty neat. I actually came in to do an interview with the local news because no one else in the store wants to get in front of the camera, I guess. I'm clearly uncomfortable with it. So went in and got to talk a little bit. I'm not sure when that's going to be on the news. I would assume tonight, but I didn't ask because I didn't think to. So we'll see. So if you happen to see me on the local news, hopefully I don't sound like a stuttering idiot any more than I usually do. Oh, let's see. It's awfully quiet now. Anybody? We need some more topics. Otherwise, I'm just going to keep rambling about whatever pops into my head at the moment. That's dangerous. Kickstarter. Oh, that's a can of worms. Kickstarter. So we've talked a bit about Kickstarter on the podcast before in various ways of talking about it. So and one of the things that's becoming more prevalent as time has gone on, and thank God it has, is people who are creating the Kickstarters for board games. We're specifically looking at board games for the most part here. Are more frequently now creating retailer pledge levels, which means that it makes sense for retailers to pledge and get these products, so we're not totally getting bypassed. Because that was the thing with Kickstarter. Like, at its core, the idea of Kickstarter is great. You have something you want to do, you put it out there to the public, they see it, decide if they think it's worth funding, and if it is, it gets funded and you get your project. You get to make it, you get to distribute it, it's great. But as Kickstarter, as time has gone on and Kickstarter has become more prevalent, a lot of companies use it as like a pre-order system, basically. So, or more of a risk-free system for them, so they can determine how much product to create. So you have a company, a board game company that distributes and produces board games, and in the past they would just make a bunch of them and ship them out to stores and hopefully they'd all sell. Well, now they can put it on Kickstarter and get people to purchase it before it comes out, so it's paid for already, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. I'm not trying to come off and say that they shouldn't be doing this, or that's an abuse of the idea of Kickstarter or anything like that. But it does bypass the local stores. So if you want to get this game first, if you want to get it with all of the special things, you go and do the Kickstarter. And if you do the Kickstarter, your money goes directly to the publisher, instead of there being a store in the middle of that. And then the store doesn't make money off of it. The store gets copies later. They don't have all of the promo materials and the upgrades and things a lot of the time. Sometimes Kickstarter stretch goals and things aren't exclusives, but a lot of times they are. And so you end up selling 3 copies of a game that you could have sold 10 copies of because 7 people bought it through the Kickstarter instead of waiting for it to come to retail. It is what it is. It's just another challenge, I guess. I'm not a big businessman. I've just talked with the business people here about it, so I've picked up some things there. My personal feelings on it are that personally, I like Kickstarter better as a small business or an individual platform for getting your things out there, rather than a glorified pre-order system. I think if you're a publisher that has the money to produce the games or whatever it is you're selling, but we're talking specifically about board games right now, I think if you have the money to do that, then, you know, that's a better way to go about it than to do it this way. But I totally understand the reason for anybody wanting to do it this way, because, like I said, there's very little risk then, and that's fine. Getting back to something we were talking about in the midst of all that, it's that there are more retailer pledge levels coming out now, which means that retailers can get it. They usually get it for, or they'll get it for a lower cost, and then, you know, they can sell it in the store and get all of the special things, the stretch goals and stuff like that. So stores aren't being completely bypassed anymore, which makes the whole thing a lot more palatable. And it's fantastic, for us. There have been a few games and expansions and things that we've kickstarted recently, and we maybe get a couple of people to pre-order locally, but what'll happen eventually is we've got it up on the website in our store. We'll have a pre-order out there for a while, and then someone inevitably didn't get in on the Kickstarter. They didn't know what was happening, or they didn't have money at the time, and now they want to get it, and they see that some store is offering it up. They can order it from us and have it shipped out to them. It's interesting. There is a whole lot that we can keep talking about with Kickstarter. And John is asking there, what Kickstarter games am I looking forward to? There are a few. That's another thing with Kickstarter, is that there are so many out there. I don't know how people keep track of them all. Like, there are people who are on top of it. Like, these are the Kickstarters that are coming out this month. And obviously there are channels you can go through, Board Game Geek, which is an online site for board games, reviews and forums and things like that. They'll usually have a roundup of various Kickstarters that are coming out or have come out. So there are ways to kind of keep track of that, but there's just so many coming out, and a lot of them get funded, which is very interesting. It means that there are so many board games out there now, and the numbers are increasing every year. So there's just not enough time to play them all. But what games am I looking forward to? What games going through Kickstarter I'm looking forward to? There are a few. I'm very anxiously awaiting the Spirit Island expansion, Jagged Earth. For those of you who haven't tuned in and listened to me talk about something in the last day or two, you probably haven't heard how much I love Spirit Island or that I playtested the expansion. So let me tell you, I love Spirit Island and I playtested that expansion. I'm very excited to get the actual physical components in my hand and to put that out. It's great. If you enjoy Spirit Island, you will love this expansion. If you haven't played Spirit Island, you should really try it, because it's a phenomenal game. It's so, so good. So I'm looking forward to that for sure. We have a few games that we kickstarted that are coming to the store. Return to Dark Tower. It's all successfully funded right now. They're just going through a period with the pledge manager, and we have to put in our final orders. So if you're watching this, if you're interested in it, check it out. It is, it's made by Restoration Games, who have, their whole shtick is taking old beloved board games and reinventing them for our modern hobby. So they've done Fireball Island, they did Stop Thief, blanking on the other ones. They've done a few others, and so they've tackled Return. There's a game, board game in the 80s called Dark Tower, and it had an electronic tower that, you'd take your turns and you'd put in some values and it would affect things on the board. And so they've redone this now. With this super cool looking tower, it handles everything through an app. and it looks really cool. I'm excited to see it. I'm really hoping that we, because if you order enough copies, they will send an extra copy to the store as a demo. And I hope we get that, because I would love to have that demo copy so we could play it on stream. We could have it and actually set it out and let people play it. And then, you know, again, hopefully it leads to a purchase. But I'm really curious to see what that's like, because I vaguely remember the Dark Tower board game in the 80s. I never played it. Like, it was one of those things where, you know, we could, that was never really something. Maybe it could have gone on a Christmas list or something, but I was very likely never going to have that game. But it seems really interesting. And then the fact that now they've gone through and the two, like, main designers, there's, like, a ton of people on it, because you have the app design, you have the game design itself and other things. You have the gentleman who is responsible, or largely responsible, for creating Legacy games, whose name it's, I should look up how to pronounce this, because I've had to say it several times on the podcast and streaming, and I have no idea if I'm saying it right, but it's Rob Davio. So apologies again if I get your name wrong consistently. There's him and Isaac Childress. And Isaac Childress, of course, is the creator of Gloomhaven, which is one of the biggest board games in the past several years, both figuratively and literally. It's a giant game. So with those guys behind it, and then a whole slew of other people, with, like, the tower looks really cool, and the it just looks interesting. So I'm interested in that. We were talking a bit before about Marvel United. I'm curious about that one for sure. And I need to figure out here if we're going to try and kickstart that one within the store, if that's going to be a good one to do. But that one caught my eye for sure. And of course, we were talking about Gloomhaven there, Frosthaven, which is the large sequel to Gloomhaven, will be coming to Kickstarter March 24th. So that one we're definitely doing in store with a retailer pledge level and stuff. So that looks fascinating. John, there's one that you had mentioned to me. I do not remember the name, but I'm going to look that up and figure that out. But essentially, there's one that he brought to my attention that is their pitch line for it is what, that it's like Star Wars and Gloomhaven mixed together, something like that. It's basically a large sci-fi Gloomhaven-ish board game, but not like just a straight ripoff of Gloomhaven in space. You know, it's got other things going on. So that one sounds interesting. There was another one that was brought to our attention. And by the way, we'll just say it again in case you haven't caught one of the other recent podcasts where we've talked about Kickstarters. If you know of a Kickstarter that seems interesting, bring it to our attention. Let us know. Because, like I said, it's hard to keep up with all of them and to know which ones we should and shouldn't deal with. But there is one that's actually a reprint of two Roll and Write games. So essentially, you've got your game, the board and stuff, and like a dry erase marker, and there's some correlation between rolling dice and then writing on the board. And so there's, I'm not going to remember the names of these two, but for retailers, they're not doing a pledge level on that one. It's just basically they're just taking pre-orders to restock, because these games have already been released. But we'll definitely be notified when they get that all done, and we'll see if we're going to get copies in store. But one of them's like you're managing a rock band's tour across America. I'm blanking on the other one now. But that seemed kind of interesting. That was another one, like I said, that was brought to our attention. So, other than that, I can't think of any other ones. Oh, I guess I am interested in Blood on the Clock Tower, which is one of the ones that we kickstarted. There's been a few delays in the production of that one, but they're slating August of this year. That's when they're projecting that it should be out. It was supposed to be out a little bit earlier this year, but they're now saying August should be the release of that. So I think most of the copies of that we've pre-ordered have sold, or people have pre-ordered those copies, but that is one where they they're giving us a demo copy. So if you're do the retailer pledge level, you get a demo copy. And so we'll have that in store. And I'm super excited to see what that's like. Because the game itself, if you ever played Ultimate Werewolf, for example, you know, you have a game, you have a bunch of people sitting around. Some of them are werewolves, some of them are they're villagers, some of them are other people that do things. And, you know, everyone goes to sleep at night, you close your eyes, and then certain roles wake up and they do things. The werewolves kill somebody, and then the villagers, when everyone wakes up, the villagers have to choose someone to lynch until either the werewolves win or the villagers win, or, you know, etc. So it's kind of along those lines, but there's like a whole lot of stuff that can happen. You do have to have a game master, and they walk around with the game box, which looks like a big book. They call it the Grimoire. So there's like a whole lot of crazy things that can happen there, and like, you know, some people are demons and other people are trying to poison people, and you can just do a number of things, and you basically are able to keep track of it all, and the game master keeps track of it all in their book by having the different pieces indicating the different peoples and what their status is, and there are scenarios that play out. It sounds really intricate and really interesting. So I'm very excited to see what that's like. And plan to run some events with that, get people interested to come in and try it. And we'll see how that plays. But yeah, those are the Kickstarters I can think of right now that I'm interested in, and ones that we're aware of. Yeah, wow, we've been going for about 45 minutes now, give or take. So that's roughly a podcast. Unless there are any other topics, I mean, we can go a little bit longer if anybody else has anything they want to say in the chat there, and a topic to discuss quick, or any thoughts on the things we have been discussing over the course of this last 45-ish minutes. So I'll give you a pause for station identification here while I take a drink. I've been talking a lot. I don't do that a lot. Sometimes I do. While we're waiting for that, just to see if there's any last minute things to pop in there to talk about, we'll just go ahead and mention, of course, that you are listening to a Doc's Cast recording. It's a Dog's Cast. That's not a thing. Maybe it probably is, but we're not doing that. We're doing a Doc's Cast. This is our podcast here that we record at Paradox Comics and Cards in Fargo, North Dakota. We record these and then release them. They're out by Monday morning. Usually I put them up on the website sometime on Sunday, because that's when I get around to that. But usually, if not Sunday, then it's up by Monday. And we have some episodes up there you can listen to. We'll do more live recording sessions as we go. We'd love it if you check that out. ParadoxCNC.com is the website. You can find us also on Facebook, at ParadoxCNC on Twitter, ParadoxCNC on Instagram. And of course, we're down here, 26 Robert Street, Fargo, North Dakota. You can stop in, check it out. We do have a lovely events calendar on the website that chronicles all of the great things that go on here. Plenty of good things coming up, including one that we're especially excited about. It's called It's Your Turn Game Day. That will be on Saturday, March 7th. Our regular first Saturday of every month game day is turning into a charity event to benefit the National Federation for the Blind. We are bringing in some accessibility kits, courtesy of 64-ounce Games. Check them out. Basically, they create kits that you can use with a game. So, for example, a game like Pandemic, there are cards with Braille on the sleeve, or card sleeves with Braille on them, so you can sleeve the cards, and then people who are blind or low vision can actually play and follow along in the game. And our goal is to get gamers of all types to come in and play together, because that's what we want to do. So, thank you guys for tuning in. Thank you all those who joined in the chat, and greatly appreciate you doing that, so it wasn't just me talking about random things that popped into my head. We will see you hopefully in store and on the next DoxCast.
This was a DoxCast. Hope you think it rocks cast. Oh, look at the clocks cast. Until next time, be gone.